Hey Gamecocks, this episode is brought to you by Tailgate State. These guys deliver unique designs with fans in mind that you simply cannot find anywhere else. Tailgate State offers polos, t-shirts, hats, hoodies, and more with new designs dropping weekly. The best part is that for every item purchased, Tailgate State donates $1 to the corresponding school's NIL collective so you can get involved with the NIL movement, all while looking great. Get ready for game day the best way. Just go to tailgatestateandco.com. Use code GAMECOX10, that's COX, for 10% off. Okay, here we go. Welcome to episode 149 of Cox Talking Gamecocks, brought to you by Tailgate State. Go to tailgatestateandco.com. Use code GAMECOX10, that's COX, for 10% off. I am your host, Tim Cox, and how are we doing, Gamecock Nation? Are we doing okay? It was sort of a little bit of this, little bit of that, little bit of up, little bit of down weekend as far as the Gamecocks are concerned. I'm here to break it all down with y'all, but I guess, you know, overall it's a pretty good weekend, right? You didn't have to work. You're able to sit back, watch some sports, weather's nice outside, you know, really taking a glass half full mentality on this one, especially considering finishing watching the game here on Sunday afternoon here. But nevertheless, hope y'all are doing well out there. Like I said, going to jump into the big weekend. We had big Gamecock weekend, and it really did live up to that. We had baseball in action. We had football in action. News from the football team. A lot going on here. But let's take a step back, and I'll recap the scores from around USC Athletics from this weekend for y'all here, starting with Friday. Softball beat Texas A&M 6-2. Women's tennis lost to Auburn 5-2. And then beach volleyball beat Florida Gulf Coast 3-2. And then also beat Coastal Carolina 3-2. So a lot of action for them on Friday. Saturday, softball beat A&M 1-0. Women's golf beat Auburn 3-2 and then lost to Texas A&M 3-2. Beach volleyball beat Jacksonville 5-0. That feels impressive. I feel like all you do in Jacksonville is play volleyball, right? Like, what else is there to do? And then on Sunday, softball beat and swept A&M 8-0. I saw that this was the first SEC sweep that softball has had in a couple of years. So that's really impressive. Way to go, girls. And then men's tennis beat Florida 5-2. Women's tennis beat Alabama 4-0. Woo, that was a lot. Like I said, it was a busy weekend, you know, and you had a little bit up, you had a little bit of down, but there was a lot going on in Gamecock country. And throughout the whole weekend, you had the baseball team in action. The team went up to Nashville to face number 4 Vanderbilt. It was a big-time matchup between two top 10 SEC teams, and it did prove to be a challenge as the Gamecocks suffered their first series loss of the season as they dropped 2 games to Vanderbilt, which it sucks, right? But at the same time, to have your first series loss at this point in the year, after having faced a few SEC teams as well as the team in the upstate, it's impressive to get this far into the season without having lost a series, but to have it finally happen sucks. It just does. No one likes losing. It was a real mixed bag for Carolina all weekend in Nashville, but it was just overall, like, there was just more errors from this team than we're used to, and it caught up with them. Because then you had a couple of guys on the offensive side of things who were struggling at the plate and not delivering when we're used to them not struggling and delivering. So you can't have these two things going on at the same time. If your lineup is clicking on all cylinders and you got 1 through 9 contributing for 3 games, that can mask some errors for you. But when you have some bad errors that allow runs to score and you're not able to make up for that when it's your turn at bat, that is a tough recipe to overcome. And you knew that at some point in the year, this team was going to have some adversity. It's too long of a season. There's too many games to not have a moment where you hit a speed bump. And the SEC is too good that you're not going to cruise through it. And now, with Noah Hall down, and you lost your first series, you're neck deep in the SEC part of your schedule with some top opponents still left on the schedule. This is the first time that this team is, you know, ending this series with adversity hitting them. They faced some adversity mid-series, mid-game, but they've been able to battle back and overcome it. So the whole team needs to get home, take a breath, regroup, and not panic. I mean, it was huge for the guys to win game one against who is a very good Vanderbilt team. Keep that in mind, right? And there were still some positives to take from the other two games. So we have to understand that, hey, this is baseball. It's tough to win on the road in the SEC. The team avoided a sweep. So let's just go home, regroup, and bounce back. It was Ray Tanner who said it back when he was coaching, that in the SEC, the recipe for success is to win your series at home and avoid getting swept on the road. And you should end up in a pretty good place at the end of the year. So that's what these guys did. You got game one win. Games 2 and 3 just didn't quite go our way. So let's look back at the whole series here, starting with game one. And it really was all Gamecocks. They beat Vandy 14-6. And it's funny because Carolina actually had to battle back after being down 2 runs early, but the guys answered in a major way, scoring 5 runs in the 6th inning and then 4 in the 7th. And it was really the guys towards the bottom of the lineup who did a ton of damage in this game. And it really gave you that feeling that the team was starting this series super hot, and that you were thinking that the guys at the top of the lineup would surely chip in later and things would end up being great for Carolina, thinking that you might go up to Nashville and win this series. And oh my gosh, we are truly, truly some of the elite in college baseball. You know, obviously things went a little sideways in games 2 and 3, but in this one, Will Sanders did start the game. He got the win, went 5 innings, gave up 4 runs. Eli Jones and Eli Jerzenbeck came in after that, pitching 2 innings each to round out the game. We need some nickname here for the Elis. The brother Elis, the brothers Eli, Eli Squared, because they're both EJ, so I don't know. We need something. Someone clever, think of something, we'll tag it with them. I don't know. But some player highlights from this game. Carson Hornung, he went 3 for 5 with 3 RBI. Michael Braswell, 2 for 5 with 3 RBI. And then Cole Messina went 2 for 3 with 3 RBI. So it really was a nice hit parade and a great way to start the weekend for the Gamecocks. Game 2 comes around and Carolina ended up losing 8-5. And you wouldn't have thought that this was going to be the case after the first inning, where the hits continued to come for South Carolina as the guys put up a 4 spot in the first inning. But unfortunately, the Gamecocks were not able to get a run home after that until the 9th inning, whereas Vandy had 3 innings where they put up a crooked number. And just felt like Vandy just settled into the series, settled into the game, and was able to string some hits together. Jack Mahoney started and did take the loss. He pitched 4 1/3 innings, allowed 5 runs. Player highlights from this game, I have just Cole Messina going 1 for 3 with a ribby, and Michael Braswell 1 for 4 with 2 RBI. Game 3 was the rubber match, and Carolina lost the game and ultimately the series as they fell 6-4. But Ethan Petrie got the scoring started right away for the Gamecocks with a home run, which allowed him to now be the sole record holder for most home runs by a freshman in Gamecock history. It is truly, if there was any doubt already, but it is a legitimate historic season for Ethan Petrie. That home run marked 18 home runs on the year, which allowed him to pass Justin Smoke, who had 17 home runs as a freshman. So passing the record in basically half the time, right? Smoke had 17 his entire freshman season. We're give or take the halfway mark of the baseball season this year, and Petrie has already passed it. So feels like he might push this record out just a little bit farther, make it harder for someone else to catch him next go around. But in this game after that, it was a little bit of back and forth with Vandy scoring, and then Carolina tied things up in the sixth, but it was in the bottom of the sixth that Vandy took back the lead thanks to a bases-loaded walk and a real bad error, which ultimately Carolina would not be able to bounce back from and would fall. Matthew Becker started the game getting a no decision. I think he went about 4 innings. Eli Jones took the loss, pitching 1 2/3 innings. Player highlights here, Ethan Petrie, 2 for 3 with 3 RBI, and Talmadge LeCroy, 1 for 4 with 1 RBI. So up next for South Carolina, it is a Tuesday night midweek game at home against Charleston Southern. So as I said earlier, the guys really need to have a reset here. They need to refocus and really play very good baseball in this game because you need to get some swag back before the weekend comes. You want to see some guys at the top of the lineup. You know, Gavin Cassis comes to mind. Get into the rhythm again. Have a nice day at the plate. And let's get back in the win column so that way you feel good as you will head into the weekend series against another SEC foe. But they were not the only team in action this weekend at South Carolina. I'm talking about the football team. That's right. Feels so good to talk about the guys again. But before I jump into the spring game, things started off this weekend very, very nice for Shane Beamer and company as they secured a commitment from class of 2024 offensive tackle, 4 or 5 star, depending on where you look, Josiah Thompson. Josiah is from Dillon, South Carolina, so he is staying home. He is the number one player in South Carolina in his class. He is the number two offensive tackle in the country. He held offers from Alabama, Auburn, Clemson, among plenty others. And with that, the Great Wall of Carolina is complete. You have Josiah, Cam Pringle, and Blake Franks. And this is Shane Beamer setting up this program for long-term success. I've talked about it before, but the concentrated effort to beef up the line of scrimmage and executing it incredibly well is just so amazing and incredibly impressive. I mean, he's gotten some playmakers on the defensive line, but this offensive line class is going to set up this program for success, right? And there's going to be some other guys in the mix, too, who are on campus now, you know, like Tree, Marquis Anderson. But that's how you win in the SEC. Think of the teams that have been good in the SEC in the last 10 years. They all have great offensive lines, massive human beings, which allows them to push other teams around. And then you can even look outside of the SEC and think of teams that have been good in other conferences, that tends to be the case as well. So this is Shane Beamer putting his money where his mouth is. He's constantly said, we have to be able to run the ball and stop the run. That's the key and foundation to success in his mind. So here we go. And it's fantastic. Best players in the state staying home. It's just very, very cool. This was a big, big time announcement ahead of the spring game, which Saturday night, we had football back in Williams-Brice Stadium, and it was so good. It felt so good, and it really felt right to see the team back on the field there. And it's crazy to think, because it was the first time that they had been in front of the home crowd since that epic Tennessee game. I mean, that's crazy to think of. It's correct. That feels like forever ago, but at the same time, the memories feel so fresh, but it's just crazy to think that that was truly the last time we saw this team at home. Just so great, great to welcome them back to the field at Williams-Brice. You had the black team beating the Garnet team 19-17 in overtime. And that's the first spring game I've ever seen go to overtime. I think it was the first one Shane Beamer has seen as well, because the guys in SEC Network were on the field asking him what is the plan for overtime, and he said he didn't know. So they just kind of made it up on the fly. It was all good fun. They did the two-point conversion shootout, and just a great night seeing all the guys having a good time in front of the fans. 51,000 strong attended. That was the announced attendance, and if you're paying close enough attention, you'll notice that the Upstate team, they played their spring game earlier and announced 50,000. So maybe there was a little bit of jostling, but 51,000 attended the Carolina spring game. That was very fun. But it's a funny thing, because watching the game, for every good play the defense made, you wish the offense had made a better play, and vice versa. So you're constantly in this back and forth of, that's good, but no, that could be better. And really, just as the coaches alluded to, I don't think they emptied their bag of tricks at all. It was a little vanilla. You saw a lot of short and intermediate passes, very run heavy. And with the team being split up as it was, I think you had a little bit of maybe not chemistry issues, but you had issues where guys were a little bit off here and there, just because they're not playing with the ones on the full side, right? You have some of the starters split up amongst the two teams, but overall, I think both sides of the ball flashed at times. I liked what I saw from our starters. I mean, just singling out Spencer here, he missed on a couple of throws, but he had a few that were very nice. So he stepped up in the pocket, delivered a few darts. There were some, you know, silly mistakes, a couple of bad penalties, bad drops, missed tackles. But that's what this is for. That's what this time of the year is intended for, right? Get it corrected, get it on tape, review it, tighten it up, and make sure you're good to go before the season starts. But before this game, I listed five things I was watching for, so let me review those and see where we ended up here. So number one, Dabble Loggins' offense. Like I said, it was vanilla, but I felt that you could see glimpses of what he wants to do. I saw a quicker pace most of the time, especially with the ones and twos in. I saw them taking some more intermediate throws into the middle of the field specifically. That was rarely the case last year, to the point where it was annoying. And you can tell that the tight end is going to be a featured position for this group. Dabble did not call a lot of deep throws, but I think it was the very first throw of the game was a deep shot. And although it was incomplete, I took that as a sign that he is going to want to do that, and he's going to want to make sure that Spencer is in a rhythm to do so. I also feel like he did a good job of adjusting some play calls based on who was in. Part of that could be to avoid injuries, but you saw him trying to feature guys in different ways that you kind of just know fit their natural skill set. Number two was the running backs. Now, when you think of the big three, right, Dakarion, Mario Anderson, and Juju, I don't think any one of those three guys stood head and shoulders above the rest, but each of them had at least one nice moment where there was like one run, one broken tackle, one first down conversion that you said, okay, like that's what they're supposed to do. But you probably do need to go into the portal for a proven guy. I didn't see any of those three guys like really put my concerns fully at ease. I believe each one of them can be good, and I think they all complement each other very well. But the fact is, Juju is not an every down back. He can do some great things, stretch plays, out of the backfield, catching the ball, things like that. He's not an every down back. Dakarion Joyner, I think his home is in the running back position. I think he can do some good things there. I like his skill set. I think it all has built into this season with him at running back. But the fact of the matter is he hasn't done it before. So he hasn't had a lot of reps. He hasn't gone against like a full live SEC defense as a pure running back. So there's some gray area there. Mario Anderson, he did have a couple of nice runs, and you can see running hard between the tackles. But as it was pointed out in the broadcast, he's taking two steps up here. He's not coming from the FCS, not coming from like a Coastal or, you know, Conference USA, whatever. He's coming from Division II. So there might be a learning curve, and I think he can grow into it. He's the kind of guy that what I saw, I trust if you need 2 or 3 yards, give him the rock, he'll pound it inside. But there might be some consistency issues. So I would expect that Shane Beamer tries to go into the portal to find a more experienced D1 Power 5 type of running back, though. Although, you know, in the second half, you did see a couple of guys have nice runs, Dante Miller being one of them, and I would think he could be featured. He was supposed to be a little bit more featured last year, but he was hurt. But I think we're still waiting for potential eligibility to be cleared. I don't really know, but someone to watch out for. Number three, the edge rushers. Was someone going to catch our eye to maybe be a compliment alongside Jordan Strawn? And my answer is Brian Thomas Jr. He made a few plays, and he got to the quarterback a couple of times. He looks the part. He has the family pedigree with his dad being in the NFL, so he's a little bit young. Again, needs some more reps, but that could be someone who is developed and maybe improves throughout the year to really come on for us as we get into deep, really, into SEC play. Also, he's not really a true edge. He kind of plays a little bit more inside, but Elijah Davis coming from the JUCO ranks, that was a big get. I think he made some nice plays too, forced a fumble, so I liked what I saw out of them both. Number four, the tight ends. This new, revamped, new look group looked the part. They looked really good. Trey Knox is a massive human being, first off. He was blocking well. He was running well. He had a couple of nice catches, had the touchdown. I liked what I saw from him a lot. And then Josh Simon, you know, he wore number 6. And the first time that he caught the ball and ran with it, I had flashbacks of Josh Van. I literally had to correct myself thinking, that's not Josh Van. He graduated because he was that smooth running and avoiding tackles, but he's a tight end. So both of these guys look incredibly well. Nick Elksnicks, he got in the mix too. And then shout out Connor Cox. He got in the mix of it. One Cox to another. Let's go. So feel very good with the tight end room. And then number 5 here, the defensive backs. Kind of similar to the running backs from my perspective. Outside of the starters, I didn't think anybody was head and shoulders above the rest. But you had Jalen Kilgore and Emery Floyd. They both looked good. They both made some plays. I think it was Floyd who had a bad penalty, though. But I don't think that's groundbreaking. Like, I don't think I'm, like, calling my shot saying one of these two guys could be good. I think they're both really expected to make a step forward this year for the backfield. But that rounds out my top 5. It was great to see. But there was one bit of concern following the game, and that is offensive lineman Jalen Nichols. He got banged up pretty early in the game. Looked like it might have been a knee injury, some sort of leg injury, though, for sure. He was walking very gingerly off the field. Beamer said there was no quick diagnosis, and they were going to get tests done either Sunday or Monday. So really hoping and praying that he is okay. I mean, just for someone that's played a lot of football, that would be just a really, really crappy way to get a tough, bad injury in the spring game nonetheless. So really hoping he is okay. But with the game wrapped, I mean, that's it. And the countdown officially begins until week one. I'm sure the staff has a lot that they want to work on between now and then, film, everything like that. But this was just another example in a long line of examples of the last 2 years or so that optimism and excitement and fan buy-in is extremely high at USC with Shane Beamer at the helm. So very excited. It was fun to be back on the field, fun to be talking about Gamecock football once again. But with that, y'all, that wraps up this episode. Please follow me on social media. Twitter is Cox Gamecocks. Instagram is just the name of the show, Cox Talking Gamecocks. And please like, subscribe, and review the podcast. I appreciate all y'all. Go Cox.